This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In 2009, 3 days before Halloween, a grisly crime stunned the seaport town of Anacortes, Washington.
I can only describe it as evil.
From 48 Hours, this is Trained to Kill, the dog trainer, the heiress, and the bodyguard.
He couldn't control his obsession.
Who was the hunter and who was the hunted? Follow and listen to Trained to Kill on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yannick Ngakoue just limped off the field for the Bears. This one is intercepted by Chicago and Kyler Gordon.
I mean, I love Chicago. I love everything about it. The people, the history, the team, the community. So this is where guys tells me to be. That's where I will be. It's where I want to be. As far as extension, we'll see what happens. I got no control in that, but God willing.
Pay that man his money. It looks like that is the case. Word on the street is that Kyler Gordon and the Bears have agreed on a $40 million deal with $31.256 million guaranteed, which, according to Ian Rappaport, makes him the highest paid slot defender in the NFL.
It's very difficult to find rankings of slot defenders in the NFL, because that fact that you just gave about the Kyler extension got me thinking. All right, so let's look around. Is Kyler the best? Is he considered the best? It's a scoutable thing much more than it is a quantifiable thing. There are two slot corners in PFF's top 10 of cornerbacks from last year. One is Garrett Williams of Arizona, and the other is Andrew Phillips of the Giants. But that's just ranking them on their coverage skills. Kyler, as you know, is way more than that. He's an attacker. He's a damn good blitzer. He's a real good tackler. He is a very flexible, malleable, exciting player.
He is, and I'm glad to see them reward him and for them to come to a deal on this. This is great. There was no animosity or anything like that. This is the type of thing that is great for your locker room. The idea of, look, that guy produces, that guy got paid. It helps when you're trying to make cases to re-sign your own guys. Like, look, we take care of the guys that are doing the job. Kyler Gordon, when they drafted him, I wasn't quite sure. I knew that he had all the twitchy stuff. And I'm like, okay, this is an interesting choice. For him to evolve into this player that you're talking about, where he is sometimes out on an island as a defender, and yet he's willing as a blitzer, him being a willing tackler, him not being afraid of contact, even though he's usually the smallest guy on the defense.
You can trust him to defend the edge on a run play.
You sure can.
You know, and I mean, think about the freedom that gives you.
He will hand fight. He will knife through to make a play. And because he's such a good tackler, you can use Kyler Gordon in goal line situations depending on the formation.
I understand the evolution of thought on Kyler Gordon from when he was drafted. Some of it is scouting. Some of it is also a prescient choice by polls. Because
it's his first pick, right?
Brisker? No, is it Gordon then Brisker?
Yeah, Gordon. I think it was Gordon first and then Brisker.
I think you're right. So this is a position that has only gotten more important in the NFL since that selection. It's only gotten more important since, you know, for the past years, it's up to now, it's over 70% in terms of how much the base defense for a lot of teams is the nickel.
Yeah, most teams are in 11 and between 65 and 75% of the time. So that means you better have that guy out there that you can trust, that can play what are some of the super twitchy slot receivers that are in the game.
Yep. And very often you're only having two linebackers out there. Think about how much you saw Jack Sanborn and how much you didn't see Jack Sanborn.
Right.
During the course of the year. I remember when we did this for Ben's Vision, when we looked at Kyler Gordon early on, because you've been hot for it all offseason, Lawrence. This is a prime.
I think Kyler Gordon was actually the birth of Ben's Vision.
Yeah, you really wanted to think about it. And it really is Dennis Allen's vision. In that way, because he as a defensive coordinator, and you'll hear more about him in a minute, has not been a guy who uses the nickel as much as the rest of the league historically. Up until last year, the percentages for how often the Saints under Dennis Allen, either as D coordinator and then head coach, who used the nickel were pretty low, like bottom five. In 2023, it was bottom five in the NFL, how often they were in the nickel. Matt Eberflus' Bears defense was much, much higher than that. So when Dennis Allen says on the day that he met the media that he's excited to work with Kyler Gordon and he name-checked him specifically, part of it is an excitement for Dennis Allen knowing that he's finally got a guy who is worth him doing that and expanding what he himself likes to do defensively.
Kyler Gordon is so good at what he does that he pops up on the offensive coordinator's scouting report. It's like, hey, we got to make sure we know where he is, how he's aligned, because he's got talent. He can go get it. And if you're thinking that he's the weak guy, We can send tight ends across the formation and we can take him out of a play because he's going to be unwilling to engage in some of those plays. Oh, no, 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 my friend. You are going to meet a physical conflict with Kyler Gordon in those moments. And having someone at that spot that's willing to do all of that dirty work and can make the spectacular plays is pretty awesome.
Agreed. It's good stuff, and Kyler Gordon gets the extension. And we were talking with Robert Mays, who's so damn good from The Athletic on Friday. There was a ton of good stuff in there. Draft stuff that we can use and bring back on certain edge rushers, like all different kinds of stuff. But we both lit up when you asked him about Dennis Allen and what that defense might look like with Dennis Allen because of the simple question: how good is he around the NFL?
What else do you think we should know about Dennis Allen as a defensive coordinator?
He's the best. He's the best. I love watching his defenses play. It's one of those defenses where, you know, I think that Matt Eberflus did a solid job as the Bears defensive coordinator. But I think with a lot of these four down zone heavy guys, you know, there isn't a level of kind of in-your-face urgency where they're pressing the issue. And when you watch those Saints teams play, you know, they're a four-down front, but they're a little bit more multiple than that. They're going to run some more, like, funky simulated pressures every once in a while. And the way that they play their quarters and man coverage, they're in-your-face. That is how it's going to be. They are going to challenge you the entire game. And so I just think that it's a perfect fit because it allows you to maintain your personnel that you've gone out and acquired because it fits a four down defense, but it just is a more dynamic sort of defense than the one that we've seen over the last couple of years. I mean, I truly think you could make a solid argument that Dennis Allen has been the best pure defensive coordinator in the NFL over the last 5 years. As excited as I am about Ben Johnson, the fact that they managed to pull that off, I think is something for Bears fans to be really, really happy about.
Man, that's exciting stuff. And we've been talking about how he's going to use some of this talent. Jalen Johnson is excited. He's going to get to travel, it seems, with a number one wide receiver. I wonder how Tyreek Stevenson fares in Dennis Allen's mind, Robert.
He's had a lot of defensive backs play really well in that defense over a long period of time. And it's funny because I think that there are some people in Chicago that have written off Tyreek Stevenson. You know, they think that he's a lost cause, corner is a need for this team. I would caution people against that for right now. Corner is the most volatile position in the NFL. When you look at year-to-year performance, it's really hard to maintain a high standard of play at that position year over year after year. You know, very few guys do it. Sauce Gardner had a down year this year. He's about to make $25 million a year. So I think the fact that Tyrique Stevenson, year two slump, and just the natural volatility at that position, I would not be surprised if Tyrique Stevenson had a big year this year, if he made good on some of the flashes that we saw from him as a rookie.
Loved hearing that from Robert Mays.
That's a counterintuitive opinion out there, or it's at least an opinion counter to the prevailing wisdom on Tyrique.
You know what? I thought about it, and after hearing it again from Mays, Dennis Allen is so good that he got Robert Mays to sound like Hub. At the beginning, he was like, he's great. That is the quintessential Hub giggle when he is talking about something.
That's interesting. I mean,
what else do you think we should know about Dennis Allen as a defensive coordinator?
He's the best. He's the best.
That's a great call.
There was never, ever any real closure on the possibility that he shot someone in Philadelphia at the end of his career.
I will say that's funnier. It's funnier, just the whole concept. Dennis Allen being good is funny, but Marvin Harrison maybe shooting somebody at the end of his career, that's just comedy. You know what I mean? I mean, how do you not laugh at that? It's a crowd pleaser.
It was comedy until I saw him at the Hall of Fame.
Marvin?
Yeah. You know who Marvin's... did a radio show with in college?
Who Marvin Harrison did a radio show with in college?
Let's see. He sure did.
At Syracuse. I'll say Mike Tirico.
You want to guess, Tanny?
Benetti?
No, he's not. Shane? Too old for Benetti. Hang on, this is a good one. I got another
no,
guess.
No, I don't.
Was it Bird?
Well, hold on. While you guys think about that, let me tell you about this. Wednesday, April 16th versus the Miami Heat, the Bulls are going to be playing. And we're going to have a ticket giveaway. Yeah.
Wait. You mean this Wednesday?
Yeah, the play-in.
The play-in game? The Bulls against the Miami Heat?
Yes. We are going to do that.
Tell me more, Lawrence.
So we have a sounder for this, Tanny. So when you hear this.
Mattis Vincelis, the rookie with big time onions. You got to love him.
Yes, you do. 312-540-0670 is what you would call the next time that you hear it.
Not right now.
You can also go buy tickets because they're on sale now. And you can go to bulls.com/postseason to do that.
I like the yellow sweet big time onions. Those to me are like the most malleable. You can do the most with them.
Big time onions!
Yeah, again, don't call. Don't call yet. just to be clear.
Bulls tickets?
Yeah.
Don't brick it?
No.
Can I kick it? Bulls in five.
Yes, you can!
Bulls in five.
Bulls in five. They got to win a game first.
They got to win two games.
They're at good point. They got to win two games. Because
they lose the one game, and that's the end of that.
All right.
But, so all right, so you guys now have had enough time to think.
Iron Eagle.
Nope.
Oh, that was a good guess. I went with the age group.
Eagle probably too old, right?
Or I don't know.
He's close,
I think he's a little too old.
Okay. Greg Papa.
No.
I'll take Syracuse broadcaster.
Tom Papa. Oh, I thought we were doing categories. Just naming Papas.
Big Papa.
That's right, partner.
I don't know.
Hold on. Syracuse, Marvin Harrison's age radio show.
Andrew Filippone, Nick Wright,
Danny
Costas.
Danny Parker.
You guys are really close. You jumped over the other person.
Oh, it's not Tirico. Donovan McNabb.
No.
Zaidman.
There it is.
Oh, goodness.
Zach Zaidman and Marvin Harrison used to do a radio show together at Syracuse.
So what does Zach know about the alleged shooting?
He doesn't know anything about, you sure about any that? Of that.
He's maybe heard a little bit about some of that.
But what he does know.
Well, it was his show. He's on that show.
Yeah, he's on that show.
So you know, Marvin is not, he is not for the play. And I literally accidentally ran into him.
Oh boy!
At the Hall of Fame,
like physically?
Yes.
Oh, it's so literally.
And
yeah.
I was like, oh,
that's trouble. Like, that's trouble.
I dropped Zach's name, and it was all love.
Oh, good. There you go.
It was all love.
He could say Gunner. I mean, how small and insecure do you have to be to get mad at someone for accidentally running into you in a crowded place?
No, I mean, it's not that he was getting mad. It's just that Marvin does not suffer fools. Like, he's one of those dudes where,
that's why
he, you know.
Well, you weren't doing anything to him. You just accidentally ran into him.
I was not.
There's no fool to suffer.
But hey, you know.
That's why I hid that gun in the garbage can in the alley,
allegedly. Then I mentioned
Zach, and he was like,
he wanted
how
to hit
is
you
he?
More.
No, he was like, how is he? I love that guy.
Zach gives you a hall pass. Zach gives you a hall pass with a lot of people.
Yes, he does. And I used it.
Speaking of MLB, is that a workable segue?
Sure.
Okay, thanks.
Fine.
I've been dying to get this in. And this is for.
Oh, is this the question?
This is the question. Don't look at the text line in case anybody knows.
Speak said, I have a trivia question for you guys. It's good. I'm going to call that terrible trivia. You should throw it away.
He also said that he wanted to ask it to Stoney.
I was going
to
ask Stoney.
And I'll say this.
What?
If you know the answer, then he knows the answer.
I think that, yeah, he would have just answered
well,
it.
Well, I mean, will tell you, Speaks, yeah. If you've noticed it, I've noticed
I wanted to give it a little drama. That's why I didn't ask him, because the answer would have just come out right away. Anything I know, he knows. Five active pitchers in Major League Baseball have now beaten every team in the league. Five active pitchers have beaten every team in the league.
I saw this one.
Oh, you did?
I saw who like started this graphic because he did it most recently. That's
the fun part.
My guy.
Go ahead and give it out.
Jose Quintana.
Jose Quintana is now the fifth active pitcher to have beaten every team in the league.
Clayton Kershaw?
No.
Justin Verlander.
Verlander's yes. Kershaw hasn't beaten the Dodgers. That's the problem.
That's okay.
Verlander's a yes. But how about Quintana? I mean, that's
that creep can roll.
It's really cool, man. Since 2012, yeah. He's been doing it effectively.
He's turned it into a crazy long career. So those are two of the five, Verlander and Quintana.
Another guy that you could have brought back here for these guys.
No, can't supplement that talent. Him and Sale, Abreu, can't supplement it. Got to get rid of it.
Yeah. No, I meant this year.
This year.
I meant this year instead of the choice that you did make.
Mm-hmm.
So just never mind.
So those are two.
Scherzer?
Yes, sir. Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander, Jose Quintana.
Only active players?
That's it. Active players.
Garrett Cole.
Garrett Cole is correct. Very nice. So Cole, Scherzer, Verlander, Quintana, and there's one more.
Is Sale the last one?
No, he's not. It's a good guess.
Okay.
But it's not
Damn
Sale.
It.
I don't know who he hasn't beaten, but it's not Chris Sale. This fifth guy is like one of my favorite pitchers to talk to. I did like 15 minutes with him.
Daniel Norris.
No. Did 15,
Carlos Rodon.
Nope. Did 15 minutes with him in the visiting clubhouse a couple years ago.
Who was visiting?
The team that he was on.
Damn.
He's no longer on that team. He's on a different team. It's first year with a new team for this guy. He's very old.
Jamie Moyer.
No.
Very
anybody? Former Astro, former Brave, former Tampa Ray, current Baltimore Oriole. Charlie Morton is your answer. Charlie Morton is 40 years old. He's the oldest player in baseball. Charlie Morton is the oldest, I believe he's the oldest player in baseball.
Kenny, you'll get him next year.
So there's your five. How about Jose Quintana joining that group? Morton, Verlander, Scherzer, Garrett Cole, and Jose Quintana.
That's crazy. That's crazy work right there.
Isn't
Quintana.
It?
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Sorry, Justin Verlander is, of course, the oldest player.
Yeah, is he 43?
He's 42 years old. Yeah. So Verlander is one. Charlie Morton is two at age 41.
Then who? Give me the top 10.
Yuli Gurriel at age 40 for the Padres, the red-hot Padres. Then Scherzer. Then Justin Turner, who I hope is not cooked, is...
I don't think he's cooked. I think he's just... That's a real bad matchup for him last night, and he wouldn't have played if there weren't injuries.
Mm-hmm. I don't think he's cooked, but didn't look good. Carlos Santana, I love his records. Chris Martin, Yu Darvish.
I love his records.
Yeah. Oh, look at that. Martin Maldonado. And Andrew
David Eckstein.
Yeah, not David Eckstein. A texture did say Jerry Reinsdorf probably loves Chase Meidroff, right? He just loves him. Like that dude.
You won't pay him though.
No matter how much he likes him, he won't pay him. There you go. All right, I feel better. I got the trivia in. I'm going home. See you later, everybody.
All right, well, cool. Then Josh Schrock and I will just talk about the Masters and the Bears. In what is a very rare guest that's going to be able to do both.
That's a good double.
Yeah, we're going to do the double. Josh Schrock's going to talk golf and football with us next in The Score.
Did you speak to him in there? How's he doing? Do you know?
No idea. Didn't talk to me once all day.
Did you try and initiate conversation with Rory at all?
He wouldn't talk to me.
I don't know if you have to if you're the Masters champion. They got beef.
And they're not ready to let any of that beef go just yet. It's a Spiegel and Holmes show. We got you until 6 o'clock. There's still some more White Sox stuff that we need to get to before the show is done, but this is a little bit more like bigger picture, higher minded type stuff that we need to do. But yesterday was amazing for a lot of reasons. Watching it play out, it was beautiful. It was sports at the highest level and the highest emotional range that all of us could vibrate on. So we thought that we would invite our buddy Josh Schrock on. You might remember Josh as someone who covered the Bears for a long time. Well, guess what? Now he covers golf for golf.com, and he joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. Sir, thank you very much for joining us. It's appreciated.
Hey, it's always a pleasure, guys. How are we doing?
Doing really well, and no one's doing as well as Rory, even though at times it looked like that was getting ready to fall apart. Was there a moment when you thought he wouldn't be able to regain it and get that green jacket?
I thought he lost it and won it about four separate times. I think, the opening double bogey, it was honestly, I was like, wow, this is going to fall off the tracks really quickly. The wedge on 13, I think, as everyone will point to, that's a shot that I hit. I've never seen a worse shot in a major championship. I thought that followed with the next bogey where he lost the lead officially. I thought he was done, and to come back and hit that sweeping 7-iron on 15 to 8 feet. I know he missed the eagle putt, but, so resilient. And he said it for 10 years now. He just keeps getting back up. And I thought yesterday was such a microcosm of the last 10 years for him, just getting punched over and over again, really making all the mistakes he's made the past 10 years to lose these and coming back and finally getting it done. It was a special day.
You know, a friend of mine made the comp that it was like game 7 of the 2016 World Series. Like, for the Cubs to have to get over their hump, it had to be something ridiculous and back and forth like that. So is this the kind of round of golf we had to watch Rory survive in order for him to cross over?
Yeah, I think this was the only way he was going to exercise whatever demons he had. I don't think it was ever going to be some sort of five-stroke coronation where the last four holes are just people chanting his name and there's no pressure. It had to be this way. It had to be short missed putts with hero shots, with dumped wedges, with incredible escapes. It had to have everything, and I think that now he's going to be freed up to maybe go on a run at these things, because this was, I mean, you could see it yesterday. He talked about his legs were jelly. He couldn't feel his hands. You could tell the nerves. The moment it was all over him. And for him to be able to miss that putt on 18 and come right back and hit not only a good drive, but then stuff that wedge to 4 feet to give him another short putt to win. I think the 2016 Cubs is an apt comparison. You know, I compared it today in my column to the Red Sox in 2003-04. I remember, you know, Derek Jeter famously told Aaron Boone when they were losing game 7 in 2003 and Pedro was dealing, he said, "Don't worry, the ghosts will come out." And the ghosts always come out for people who are tormented until they don't. And I think this was the way Rory had to do it.
That's a really good one too, because 2004 they come back from down 3-0 for the first time ever. So
yeah,
it had to be something, Lawrence, ridiculous like that to break through.
Watching the way that this played out with the guys who were there, where there were opportunities for DeChambeau to take hold of this. There was an opportunity for Scheffler to get back into the mix. And it seemed like one by one, every guy was like, well, now I'm going to hit my worst shot of the tournament. That to me was as incredible as watching Rory get off the deck three times in the final round.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the great thing about the Masters is that it seems like no matter how far back some guys are, they're never out of it, right? I mean, you saw Justin Rose make 10 birdies yesterday. I mean, an incredible round of golf. And then you saw guys like Bryson just didn't have it, right? I mean, his irons were poor. I mean, he was hitting balls up until 6 minutes before his tee time, which is very, very unnatural, like clearly searching. You saw all sorts of guys just kind of fall apart. I think Shane Lowry, who started the day six back, shot 81. Just a car crash kind of series of events there, except for Rose, who I think deserves a ton of credit, not only for being a 44-year-old guy who has back issues and who lost the game for a while and could have taken easy money to go to live and chose not to and chose to dig it out, and now he's finished runner-up in the last two majors. I think he deserves a lot of credit, and you know, maybe he'll get his second, but really, really fascinating day at Augusta National, just to watch so many big names not be able to capitalize on Rory really trying to give it away countless times.
Josh Schrock covers golf for golf.com, and you might remember him from his Bears days at NBC Sports Chicago.com. You know, the thing about golf, Josh, is like the clutch and choke is just so obvious because the sport is so naked. It's so completely undeniable. And we're watching this here. In football, is there a comp? When do guys choke or clutch in the midst of a football game in your mind? And it's nowhere near as naked, but when do we see it, I suppose? A shanked punt? A missed kick? I mean, those aren't real players, as we know.
Yeah, no. I think that's interesting. The thing about golf that makes it so fascinating is that it is such an isolated, lonely sport. Team sports are so different, and you know, I mean, there's so much talk about clutch in basketball, clutch in football. What does that actually mean? I think in football, maybe it's a drop pass or an airmail to an open receiver late in the game, but it's so hard. It's just not the same as an individual sport where all eyes are on you and it's only you. Like, I mean, you can go in a locker room after a big football game where the team loses and there are 10 different players maybe you talk to about something that they could have done differently that flips the game, and you know, that's that. And in golf, it's just you, right? It's just you and your thoughts and the course, and that's what makes it such a window into the soul in a way that maybe team sports aren't.
So a guy that you covered since he was drafted got paid.
Yep. He did.
Kyler Gordon got his money, and now he's the number one AAV slot guy in the league. I'm guessing you're not surprised.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, I think for as critical as I was of a lot of the moves Ryan Poles made when I was covering the team, Kyler Gordon was never that. He was the guy who I thought consistently got better, and whenever he was healthy, he has been one of the best slot corners in the league. I mean, the instincts, the ball skills, he's so good blitzing. I thought he got better as a tackler during the first 3 years. Well-deserved payday, and it's funny, you know, for all the kind of misses Ryan Poles has had in certain areas drafting, he has been pretty good at drafting secondary players, and so it's good that Kyler got his money, because that was you know, that's a franchise building block you get with the first draft pick you ever make. And, you know, it's good for Kyler.
When you watch this off season that the Bears have had with all these signings, do you think, are these Ryan Poles moves or are these Ben Johnson infused moves to your eye?
Yeah, no, it feels Ben Johnson infused to me, just because I find it interesting that the GM, who's an offensive lineman, who is supposed to be an offensive line guru, spent 3 years with Matt Eberflus not really investing a ton into the offensive line, and then Ben Johnson showed up, and all of a sudden, oh, hey, you know, Joe Tooney and Drew Dahlman and, you know, and Jonah Jackson are here. Like, that seems odd to me that a light would just flip that, oh, maybe we should invest into the offensive line. So I love the moves, but they do feel Ben Johnson infused, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I think if you're Ben Johnson, and Lawrence, you and I talked about it before he even took the job, right? If you're going to take this job, you're going to want the power. You're going to want to make sure that all the ducks are in a row so that, you know, what might be your only chance to be a head coach, it goes off without a hitch.
Yeah, and that's the way the NFL is supposed to work. That the head coach is in charge. I'm sorry, Lawrence, he referred to you, so I thought, you know, you guys have a thing. But
You did the thing where you were like, you've got the next question.
I got it.
All of a sudden, well, you pointed at me and then started talking.
I know, but then you shook it off. You're like, what are you doing? And like, so I thought you might go back to me. So anyway, Josh, look, have you heard the theory on Ryan Poles, an offensive lineman, that I have, which is that he, and maybe Ian Cunningham too, have previously to this year, because I agree these are Ben Johnson infused, they tried to draft and develop themselves, you know, like not super skilled, badass offensive linemen. But if they had had the coaching and the development that they were going to provide for these guys that they've picked up, then they would have succeeded. That's been my theory on Poles and linemen.
No, that's interesting. I mean, I don't know if that's true, but that's something I could certainly buy. I always found it interesting that the conversation around Poles and offensive linemen always started with, he was part of the regime that drafted Creed Humphrey. Like, Creed Humphrey was this diamond in the rough. He was an All-American, and it was like, well, I don't know if that's really such a badge of honor. But that's an interesting take on Poles and offensive linemen. I'm happy for Caleb Williams and for Bears fans that he finally decided to invest the money where it needs to go.
What do you think makes sense for them with this year's draft?
Oh man, that's a good. I think my stance on Braxton Jones. So if you have a left tackle that you like and you think he's a franchise guy, I would take the left tackle and make Braxton the swing guy, and then you could feel pretty good about the offensive line. I think the Braxton Jones story is really great. He is overperformed where he came from. He's a hard worker, but eventually I think there are just limitations on what you can do. And I think it's time to find a true franchise left tackle if you can at nine. And there should be some options. I don't know how you feel about arm length and Will Campbell. I'm sure you guys have gotten out the ruler and measuring tape enough to figure that out. But I'll defer to you guys on whether or not his arms are long enough, or maybe you go somewhere else.
Well, I have this sneaking suspicion that Poles is going to win at the left tackle spot because he gets one more year of Braxton and his prize, Kieran Amagaji, to try and prove that he's got left tackle down. Yeah. So, yeah.
There you go. Yeah. There you go, Kieran Amagaji. Yeah, hey, I hope it works out. After I left the beat, I watched the experiment unfold, and I'm not sure that's going to work out.
It didn't. It hasn't so far, but maybe it will. He was good, and you see him. He's athletic, and he definitely wants to be good. So I like that part of it.
He's a developmental prospect, which is definitely what you use a third-round pick on, I'm told.
Uh-huh. That is not how it works.
A texter to the show, Josh, says that choking in football is when it's the last play of the game and you're turned away from the line of scrimmage talking to fans in the stands and you lose on a Hail Mary. That is the definition of choking in football.
Okay, I like it. Let's go with it. I'll co-sign that.
All right, that's not bad. So now that Rory's got this thing that he's figured out the how to get a Masters, what's now the biggest story in golf going forward?
You mean on course? Because off course, it's, are these guys ever going to come back together? And who knows?
Let's live there for a second. No pun intended. Let's talk about this, because there seems to be some softening from the players, or at least like wanting their respect back when it comes to the majors or big time PGA tournaments. How do you square that circle?
I don't know that you can, honestly. I think from what I've been told, sniffing around on this, the attitudes have kind of changed, and like, there are players like Rory who have been like, okay guys, this is enough. Let's just all get back together. This is dumb. Like, the money's unsustainable. But a lot of guys on the tour are still incredibly upset at the guys who left, and rightfully or wrongfully so. And they either don't want them back, or they want penalties for them to come back. And then from the tour standpoint, honestly, if you look at the guys on LIV, there's only like four guys, maybe five, that they're even interested in. So at this point, I think they're kind of looking at it like, Bryson's contract is going to be up at the end of this year. Brooks's contract is going to be in the up. Can they pick one off? And then Liv is left with Rahm and one of Brooks and Bryson and Tyrrell Hatton. Like, I think they're just going to try to wait Liv out at this point. And I think eventually, I just don't know how long the stalemate's going to last, because I think the tour has gone from feeling like they need to make a deal to now they are in a position of strength. The ratings are much better. Clearly Liv is not getting a foothold, right? They were just on Fox on network television last week going up against one of the weakest PGA Tour fields, and they couldn't even draw 500,000 people.
Wow.
So that's where that's at.
Josh, what did you make of Bryson and Rory not speaking at all during the round, but then hugging at the end? I mean, does it feel emblematic of living the tour, or is their relationship more complicated than that?
No, I don't think so. And I think, you know, I know what Bryson said, and I've seen the video, and I think the thing with, I think Bryson is a very finicky communicator. And I think what he was trying to say is not that, one, if Rory was icing him out during the competition, well, of course so. Like, Michael Jordan's like Tiger Woods would do the same thing. They're trying to win. I think what he was mainly saying is, like, I was trying to talk to him after the round to see how he was doing going to the playoff, and he didn't want to talk to me. They're not friendly. I mean, they did the match. They're not buddies. And I think Bryson is such a complicated relationship with guys on the tour because he wasn't very popular when he was there. Then he left, and he was, you know, the lead plaintiff in the lawsuit against the tour. So you leave, and then you sue the guys. They're probably not going to like you very much. That's just kind of where it's at, right? So I think that's just life, and it's just life with Bryson.
Josh, we appreciate you picking up the phone, man. Continued success. I'm glad that you're getting an opportunity to cover another sport that you absolutely love, and you're doing a great job of it.
Hey, thanks, boys. It's a pleasure. Anytime.
Thanks, Josh. Bryson said he wouldn't talk to me. He didn't say a word to me all day. But then he said, I wanted to cry for him, for Rory. I mean, as a professional, you just know to hit it in the middle of the green. I can't believe he went for it. It must have just flared it. So it is interesting. I think Bryson was a little grumpy that Rory wouldn't talk to him.
I think Bryson wants back in the worst way.
When he's saying either Bryson or Brooks, I bet Bryson might get back in. That might happen.
I think he wants it. And we'll see how all of this stuff goes. There's a lot of people who have been shooketh by how all of this is played out on both sides of it. And it'll be interesting to see how, if possible, it even reconciles. We need to take a break. When we come back, someone is being a trooper. Someone is playing hurt around the Bulls. We'll share who next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
You guys are friends of the program, man. I can never turn y'all down.
I know that's right. That's Stacey King.
The friends of the program are my friends, and they are friends for life.
Afternoons on The Score.
Wizards will fall to 17-64.
Oh! We're going to close it out. Close out the home game. Close out this voice. It's been a tough game for me. You know, I just kept battling. I just want to say shout out to Bill Cartwright, who put this curse on me.
Shout out to Hot Tea and Cough Drops as well this evening.
Doc Rivers is somewhere laughing.
That causes me, like, anxiety and emotional pain. As a voice professional who has been through the battles of voice troubles.
I went through it 3 weeks ago, and luckily I took Molly Cruz's advice. We were talking about it, and she's like, stop fighting through it. Go get yourself some steroids and get back on the air.
Oh, there you go.
And I was like, okay.
Yep. And your power also came back. Or were you just swinging earlier? I think you were just swinging earlier.
I was swinging earlier. That was the thing. That's why I was able to hit the ball out.
Thank you.
But
Obuzelis again.
Well, you're going to learn tonight. You're going to learn tonight.
Come this game for Kevin Hart.
You're going to learn tonight.
You're going to learn today.
You're going to learn tonight. You cannot go up there with that weak stuff with Buzelis.
And Hart Tucker drives and scores. He's got double figures.
THT, dynamite.
And when you're as a...
Ouch.
Like, I can play... I played in, like, the lower register of my voice for the times where I was struggling.
Sure.
And was getting real close to the microphone. If you're Stacey and part of your thing is
your inflection. Your inflection, yes. All over the place. Using the full range, everything you got. Hell yeah, man. It's your personality.
If you're someone who has catchphrases.
Oh, yeah.
You got to nail those catchphrases.
The spin, the drive!
Oh, THC dynamite! Oh, man.
Stacey, you know the deal. You can't spell truth without...
I forgot what it THT.
Butler THT. Drives and scores.
I mean, you know, I'm trying to battle a cold right now, man.
Hey, man, I'm not blaming him.
Oh, my goodness. That's a good one, though. That's good.
You can forget your catchphrases.
It's Terrell.
Well, while you're battling, you can forget it. Man, last year when we did the Tributosaurus Springsteen show on the Wednesday night before Thanksgiving, I had nothing. Like, I had like 45% maybe of vocal power.
What do you do? Like, when you know that you don't quite have it, but you have it enough to show up.
Well, that's the thing. You don't have to show up, because ideally you're supposed to just shut up. Don't make any noise. Stop producing sound.
That's... I work with someone who just walked around with photos of the inside of his throat to prove to everyone how bad it was.
And then he got a Slurpee machine.
Well, we tried. We definitely got him Slurpees every day. I think the provider of the Slurpees is sitting next to me right now.
Slurpee machine. Mac had voice troubles and was convinced that the Slurpee was the key to solving said voice troubles.
It usually is the opposite of that.
Oh, it's very much the wrong substance. Yes, very
one
much.
Like if you're
hot tea, lemon, steam, yeah. Quiet,
cold is bad good for night, the everybody. Vocal cords. And then
what about corn syrup? Is that good or bad? And a lot of sugar.
That part is not the worst part of it, but the act of ingesting the Slurpee is also not good.
Yeah, no, but I'll tell you what else is not good. Chloraseptic and what's the other one? The Cepacol. Yeah, like with the hardcore numbing, and then you can do a lot more damage because you're like, oh, I'm fine. And then you do a lot more damage.
Wonder if you tried ivermectin, Tanny.
Bulls fans, you can follow our Bulls insider Casey Johnson at CHSN.com. Presented by nationwide agent Jeff Vukovich. Get to enjoy knowing the Vuk as much as do the jingle at JeffVuk.com.
Nationwide. Is on your side.
I almost made it.
Almost made it too, baby.
Hey, that is Yeoman's effort from the gamer. Stacey,
hey,
battling through.
Determination, baby.
That's all we have, Stace.
Listen, I tell you, you know, we take pride in showing up for games, baby. We don't miss games. If we miss a game, it's because we're sick, for real.
Oh, man, it literally.
We ain't got no voice. All we got is guts, Stacey. That's it. That's it, baby. All we got is guts.
It makes me so uncomfortable. Just like, I fear for the man. I fear for the man. Be quiet.
Well,
just be quiet.
It's possible that he could have a lot of time to be quiet if the Bulls don't get this thing done.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point. Well, it's not a postseason game, though. We're there. We'll have time to talk about it. But Wednesday night, that game does not really exist.
But tickets are on sale for it. Bulls versus Heat in the play-in game. Plus, potential home games in round one of the NBA playoffs. Go to Bulls.com/postseason for all things Bulls postseason, including info on tickets, watch parties, and more. And Tanny, don't we have a pair of tickets for someone to go to the play-in today?
When they hear the sounder.
Yeah, when they hear this sounder.
Oh, boy.
Mattis Mazzellis, the rookie with big time onions. You gotta love him.
But not now.
Not now.
That's a second tease.
Later on, when you hear it, then you need to call 312-540-0670. Write that down.
Yeah.
So when you hear it again, not inside of a promo, then you can call and get tickets.
I like to get the big purple onions and just put them on the grill, like the green onions with the purple bulbs, and just grill them straight.
Grace Williams, Gary, Indiana, I love you.
Olive oil, salt, and pepper.
That's two Tommy references in the show today. Two.
On point. Referential.
Two. I need two, Utah.
Hey, we got some news. We have scoopage. We have a scoop on White Sox ownership. Listen next on Spiegel and Holmes on The Score.